What's up and happy Saturday. Welcome back to Finding Her. Before I start off with my interview with Dr. Sharon Grossman today, I'd like to do a plug for the show. I love Orgain protein powder. I don't know if you've tried it before, but what I love so best or the most or the greatest about it is it's a protein-based plant based powder, right? And I love chocolate so much, especially with diabetes. I really can only eat dark chocolate now. But what I love about this company is they made it plant-based in one serving. It's only 150 calories. I get 21 grams of protein, 15 grams of carbs, and I get 6 grams of fiber in each serving. And what I love about it, it's quick and easy. If I'm in a hurry, if I need to have a snack in between my meals because I am diabetic, I need to make sure my blood sugar levels stay consistently throughout the day. And I know many of you would love to enjoy this as well to help with keeping that regular diet and staying healthy. The second part of Orgain, which I love, other than their other products, which there's so many of them, you need to check them out. My daughter and I also love their organic superfoods. It comes in a smaller container. It's dense, 50 organic superfoods with 1 billion probiotics. And what we do with that, you can either drink it in a large glass of water and chug that baby down fast. Maybe you like matcha, this is for you. But what we do with it is we throw it into a fruit smoothie and we get all of our nutritious values in vegetables and fruits and with those probiotics in one drink. So please head on over. I will add my link in the show notes. So basically underneath this promo or the information of the show, you just scroll down and it's going to give you episode details. I will put that link to my website on there. And if you do actually go to orgain.com and you enter in the coupon code area, you can add ambassador799. That's my code. It will get you 35% off and free shipping off your first order. Do it. It's so delicious. Welcome and welcome back to Finding Her. I'm your host, Julia Busby, and I am so excited to introduce to you a guest on our show today. I'd like to welcome Dr. Sharon Grossman to the show. Hi, Sharon. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Super excited to be here.
I know, right? I've been working hard on a little series working on anxiety, and I've really combined stress because, as you know, everybody in life right now is really impacted. The demands are so much higher in our lives right now, and we need to learn how to manage it ourselves and then take steps to maybe reach out if we need help. So can you tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, sure. So I have a background in psychology, and I'm also a success coach, and I'm the author of the international best-selling book, The 7E Solution to Burnout, Transforming High Achievers from Exhausted to Extraordinary. Oh. For the past 19 years, I've coached high achievers, people who work in really high-stress industries who struggle with anxiety, overwhelm, and burnout. And mm-hmm. I work with them using my Exhausted to Extraordinary method to break through the mental fog, boost their energy levels, and so that they can enjoy more of what matters in 90 days. So that's a little bit about me and what I do. But I would say really like anything to do with stress, anxiety, overwhelm, burnout, that's totally my jam.
That's your jam. And what I'm hearing is no one is able to live this life, whether you're a high achiever or not, without stress or parts of their life that might be overwhelming and cause people to burn out, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we all need to learn how to manage ourselves. And right. You know, there's no really getting around that, whether it's during COVID, before COVID, after COVID. This is something that is so essential. And we're unfortunately not taught this in school. Mm-hmm. And so it's really an important piece that I find is often missing.
And can you tell us, you talked about coaching, and can you tell my listeners what the difference between therapy versus coaching?
Yeah. So I would say this, cause I do a little bit of both. Right. Mm-hmm. And, there's a couple of main differences. Therapy traditionally has been focused on finding what's wrong. So it's kind of the medical model. When you go to your doctor, if your foot hurts, you go to get treatment so that your foot doesn't hurt anymore. So you're going from, you know, this was my baseline. My foot wasn't hurting. And then something happened and now it's hurting. And I want you to help me get it back to baseline. So what do I need to do? And then they'll either give you some exercises, some stretches, or they'll give you some medication. And then the goal is to get it back to baseline. And that's essentially what happens in therapy, in a nutshell, where people typically come in when they're suffering, when they're struggling, and it could be, oh, you know, I have a lot of worried thoughts, I can't sleep, I have social anxiety, I'm depressed, I have PTSD. So things have not been going so well, and I need your help to help me, you know, get to that place where I don't have all these worries, when I'm not feeling so depressed, when I can, you know, have like more stable moods and things of that nature. Whereas coaching, the way we traditionally kind of think about it, is you are typically doing pretty well in your life. Like you're high functioning. You might have like a dip, you might have like a little struggle with something, but typically like people enter coaching because they want to do even better than their baseline. So if so if you're, you know, like leadership coaching as an example is, I'm already an executive, I'm doing really well in my career, but I want to take it to the next level. Or it could be that I'm doing pretty well, but I'm working a little bit too hard. And it's because, let's say I'm a perfectionist. And so coaching might help you figure out like what is the underlying thing for the perfectionism and how to, you know, circumvent that, how to change some of the things that are holding you back from being even more powerful in the workplace. So, you know, that's an overgeneralization perhaps, but that's, I think, the main premise and how people can think about it. And often what I find is when people come into therapy and somebody else is paying the bill, which often is the case when you're using your insurance, sometimes I find that they're less invested in the process.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So, it's kind of like you get into this cycle of every week, I'm going to show up, I'm going to have my therapy. And so sometimes what I see is that people finish the call and then they don't do anything with anything that they've learned. And they show up the next week and they don't even remember what we last talked about. And they don't necessarily implement the tools. And then, you know, it's a lot slower progress. Whereas with coaching, I feel like people are more invested because they're paying for the service. It's often, you know, a financial investment. So you don't want to show up. That would be real sabotage, right? Where you show up and you're just like, listen, I just paid you all this money and I'm not like showing up. And then, you know, of course you have cases where that's the case. And then you might have to address the sabotages, which is like the real issue, right? But typically speaking, what I find is that people are so much more motivated. They come in, and coaching also isn't like a forever thing. It's like, for example, in my program, it's 90 days. So you know exactly like how long it's going to take you, what you're going to learn. Like everything is
very specific.
It's so specific. It's like we're focusing on outcomes. Whereas in therapy, it's kind of like, oh, let's see what's going on for you. You know, we try to set goals, but then people often have all these crises that are constantly coming up, and then it can take a lot longer. It's not like, oh, this is going to take 3 months and then, or, you know, 2 weeks or whatever it is, and then you're not going to feel depressed anymore. It's like, it's very individual. So it's hard to know how long things are going to take. Obviously, insurance companies want you to say, you know, you're going to work with them, and then in 6 months, you're going to get them all better, and then we don't have to pay the bills anymore. You know, so sometimes you have to make a case for why you're keeping somebody longer.
Right.
And that's what makes it a little bit tricky, because it's not so clear cut, and because you sometimes don't have the motivation, or because people are struggling with whatever their mental health issues are, that right. it's not in your control per se. Whereas with coaching, because people are coming in already in a much better state, they typically are able to function at a higher level, and they're mm-hmm. able to, you know, take on the challenges and do the things that the coaching is,
or even identify out. Where they need like a little bit of extra support or to learn skills in that specific area, so then they don't continue to burn out over and over again, as an example.
That's the hope, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's awesome. So I wanted to, I think we did talk about in one of my previous episodes, I did the ADHD identification in women later on in life. And she was also a psychotherapist before. And she talked about the difference between just a little bit between why she likes doing the coaching versus the therapy, because she's retired now. So, and then also to give other people that are listening that might not know what the difference is. And then there is other options and opportunities to learn more about yourself and then gain these skills. But like you said, also, it's important for you to the people that are listening that it's for functioning at that functioning level to start off with the coaching. But I want to learn more about building resilience to avoid burnout, because I've gone through burnout a couple times in my life, just like many other humans on this planet. I know the skills, I know what resilience is, but I want to know more about it from you.
Yeah. So there's not one thing that helps people who are burned out prevent burnout or recover from burnout. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a set of things. And typically I like to teach more about emotional intelligence as like a real, in the moment thing that you can use to prevent the accumulation of stress and overwhelm and all the negativity, which contributes to burnout. So I think that's definitely like one thing that we can talk about. The other thing is that I teach is there's something called psychological capital.
Oh.
And that's comprised of four aspects. So they spell hero. And so just a good way to kind of remember it. So the first one is hope. The second mm-hmm. one is optimism. The third one, oh, sorry, I got it wrong.
That's okay.
So the second one obviously starts with an E. So that's efficacy, and then resilience, and then optimism. So that spells hero. And that's what they call psychological capital. And so we can also talk about that, because resilience is part of that process. Right. But essentially, what we're talking about when we talk about psychological capital, as you can see from that acronym, is that mm-hmm. It's a lot of mindset work. And resilience, really, just to define it first and foremost, is when something knocks you down, it's about bouncing back. And so something happens, you feel all stressed out, whatever the case might be, and you are able to bounce back to that baseline. That is actually a really important skill. And resilience is partly biological. So some people are just born a little bit more resilient than others, but the majority of it really is psychological. And that's really the mindset work. And that's why mindset training is so important. We need to work on ourselves. And so when I say that, there's a lot of different ways that you can work on mindset. If you're familiar with the work of Carol Dweck, she talks about a growth mindset versus a mm-hmm. fixed mindset. That's a huge part of it, is understanding how to think differently, you know, how to think more openly about things, how to have curiosity, how right. not to shut off options. So that's a big thing. Let's do this just for fun. Mm-hmm. Julia, if you want to share.
Oh, no. Just kidding.
If you want to share like something that when you burned out in the past was contributing to your burnout, then we can kind of dissect it and see how to apply what I'm talking about in terms of mindset.
Okay. Let's see. I am a high achiever and I tend to lack in boundaries and saying no. And my passion is to serve because I'm a teacher. So I taught in an elementary school for about 5 years and I taught a class that was very high need. So I taught students impacted with autism and communication disorders. The class was often very up and down. I did it very well. I understood the disabilities that were in there, but I never took any days off. I brought a lot of that stress home because I had up to 14 kids at one time. But some of these kids were very high needs. Some of them were violent. So I think that with me being in that position for that long, and I had a certain amount of amazing assistance underneath me, it just became too much. And instead of saying, hey, I can't do this anymore, I decided to just go deeper into it, even though it was just eating me from the inside out. And then eventually I just burned out hard, core. Emotional, all that stuff. Felt like a failure because it's like I have to go 150 miles an hour, right? Mm-hmm. Anything less than that, you know, and in these positions, and these are positions that have a high turnover rate, right? This is just a really high needs, wonderful group of students. We had some amazing times, but there were definitely some violent, hard, trying times as well. And you know, this type of classroom in special education, you know, special education in general has less teachers than in the general education setting coming into these situations. But then in a setting that I'm speaking about in my position, it's even less, right? Nobody wants to be a teacher of that classroom. A lot of it is stigma. A lot of it is they don't know what to do. A lot of these students are dysregulated for a really long time because of teacher turnover or their own life crises, you know, with their homes and all that stuff. So I was resilient, but it took quite a bit of a drastic change. And I think it was being able to look within myself to see what was going on. And then also that burnout just morphed in stress and anxiety and just made this giant tsunami that just like basically drowned me. I was drowning, you know? Mm-hmm. And it took a lot to be able to say, no, I can't do this. And my husband was just like, you know, I think if this didn't happen, you would still be there, you know? So, mm-hmm. Changed it up and now I'm in high school and I talk with other special ed teachers because we're a big, huge team. Obviously, we have a big group of students that we serve, all disability aspects. And they said too that they were in a position like that just with high school. And they said, yeah, same thing, burnout, stress, bringing it home to our families. Like it's just too much to do for a really long time. So, it was interesting and that made me feel better too, because, you know, and unfortunately everyone in positions like these, when you do last a long time, then it's like, oh, how do you do that? You know? So you didn't want to fail. So obviously high achieving and failure is something that's still hard for me to deal with, but I've been doing a lot of work. I definitely believe in professional development and learning as much as you can, whether through therapy or coaching.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing that. And
yeah,
if it's okay with you, I want to just kind of tease it apart a little bit and and just because I think this would be helpful for the listeners to understand, you know, a lot of people that I talk to are very similar to you where, you know, they're high achievers and they push themselves really hard and they are, like you said, help a lot of them in their helping professions, they're givers. And so we see this phenomenon happen a lot. And I do want to point out that there are some things within what you just said that when you really do it differently, you can have different results. And that's why.
Oh, totally.
Okay. So first thing I heard you say is that you never took days off.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I actually see a lot of with my really high achievers, right? It's like you're constantly pushing yourself and there's always more work to do and you can't miss and you're worried about like what people will think.
School's going to burn down.
Yeah. Like it's like this sense of over responsibility mm-hmm. where you are putting everybody's needs ahead of your own. And that in and of itself, without the rest of the story right there, is a recipe for burnout, because none of us are a perpetual motion machine where we just, have endless amounts of energy. We never need to recharge. Like that doesn't exist.
But right? Dr. Sharon, I thought I was the Terminator. I swear to God.
Well, you're not alone in that, and I think it's hard for people who are givers that really care, that really want to help. I work with a lot of physicians, so I see this a lot. They just overextend themselves from that place of caring. But I want to also point out that by doing that, you're not caring for yourself. And so it can't be like this one-sided equation. It just doesn't work. Right. And so if anybody's listening to this right now and you haven't taken a day off in years, and you've got all this vacation time, take some time off. Like, you don't need to burn out to wait to then quit your career or quit your job and then realize that now you can take time off. Like, just incorporate. That's what the vacation days are there for, And right. furthermore, like, usually what I see is the people that I work with not only don't take their vacation days, but they don't have breaks throughout the day and their self-care is kind of wishy-washy. So it all kind of falls under that umbrella of like putting yourself first and thinking how important you are. And I like to share sometimes, because I think everybody can wrap their head around this concept. When you think about your phone, it doesn't feel like such a challenging thing that you need to really hem and haw about it. Like, if you're using a phone, you can see very clearly what the battery level is.
And I think everybody knows instantly.
Right. And then, so if you see your battery's down to 20%, what do?
Plug it in.
You plug it in. Right. It's like a no brainer, but we don't have that visual reminder of like, you've got 20% charge left. So we're just like, all right, well, I'm still alive, I'm still breathing, so I can keep going.
And that's like our jobs is like only one piece of our lives, right? Like, you could have exactly. 5 kids, you could have 2 kids, you could have all these animals, you could have a husband, like a partner. Yeah. So it's just, I was coming home and the kids would be like, "Hey, mom, what's for dinner?" And I'd be like,
Yeah. And so that's a great point that you bring up, because oftentimes, we care so much. We give all of our love away at work. We come home to the people who truly matter to us. And then we become monsters because we got nothing left to give. It's like, just leave me alone. I have no patience for you. We become irritable, and all of that is basically signs of burnout. So you got to be smart about taking care of yourself. Like, sometimes people think it's selfish, I should give it all away, I shouldn't focus on me. I get that, but you're not working within a paradigm that is long term.
Right.
You can't last in that paradigm unless you take care of yourself. Like, it's otherwise, there's just like nothing left to give. So that's the first piece. The second one you said was you brought stress home.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also very common. And so that's where it's important to think about, how do you de-stress first, you know, at the very least, like before you come home, you got to have some way of transitioning from work into your personal life so that you don't bring all that stress home with you. So
question though, yeah. What if you work from home? Like you're
lots of people are working from home now. So that's a great question.
Right.
And I think it's a very pertinent question right now. Burnout is kind of sky high right now because people don't have that physical distinction between work and home, right? Home. If you're working mm-hmm. from home, then you can easily fall into this trap. So I would say, you know, you just have to make that mental shift. So let's say you're on Zoom all day and you get all dressed up for work, even though you're at home. You can still slip out of those clothes and into some more comfortable clothes. And sometimes when my clients do that, when they change clothes, it helps to kind of take work off of you in a way. It's kind of symbolic. So that's one thing. Definitely, if you're working from home, I would say you got to have some boundaries in terms of when work is done, because, you know, you've got your computer, you've got your phone. And so those notifications can keep coming in all throughout the night. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to just get sucked in. And so you really need to have those clear boundaries about when work is done. So if whatever it is that you decide, if it's like 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or whatever the time might be, after that, if there are, or when there are, I should say, notifications, emails, phone calls, whatever the case may be, that's what voicemail is for. And it'll be there for you tomorrow. And, you know, you're not going to take that. So either turn off the notifications or just don't look at them or don't worry about them and just really refocus onto something else. Mm-hmm. The other thing you can always do is just say, okay, like it's 5 o'clock, I'm done. I'm going to go for a walk. You know, you do something, or I'm going to go take a shower. You do something to really take your mind off of work and really transition. It could be, I'm going to go meditate. It can be whatever. I'm going to go play with my kids, like something to really shift out of that work mentality.
Okay.
Okay. So, you know, we're talking about bringing stress home and what happens if you're working from home. So I'm hoping that you're hearing that there are a variety of different things that you can do, but that it really comes down to being really decisive in advance about what your work hours look like and then finding some way to transition.
Yes. Okay. Like when my 3:55 comes around, it's like slam the computer down. Bye. See you later. See you tomorrow. But that's, yeah. I've felt the consequences deeply. Like it took me a while to get back up. And I think that there was a lot of trauma involved with that too, with the type of job that I had and then feeling like I left them, you know, when it wasn't true at all. So now those boundaries, like, because I'm like, I never want to feel like that again, you know, was like awakening in some sense that I can't be the Terminator and, you know, no voicemails, nothing is connected to my phone from work. And everybody's like, how do you do that? And I'm like, because I know what it feels like when it just takes over my life. So, nope. And don't work extra on the weekends unless I'm paid to do that. And that's pretty, for the type of position that I'm in now, there's like some stuff that I have to do. But it's not like a typical general education teacher, you know, they work from all the time, planning and doing all that stuff. And then just really like putting my boundaries up in place with like relationships at work and coworkers and stuff. So, but that was all because I learned the very hard way. So I hope that people that listen to this don't have to go through the same experience as I did, because it's really, really hard. But I was willing to put in the work, and I knew there was some spaces that weren't right when you finally were able to take a step back from the whole thing. And then I was able to like process and understand. And I did a lot of therapy for a very long time. And that's where we're at now. But that's
so
I'm really like passionate about it too.
Well, so you learned a lot of things and you've implemented a lot of those new changes and now you're in a much better place. But let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. If you were back at that other job implementing all the things that you're implementing now, what would be different?
I think there's still a lot of factors in there. I think it, I could have probably been more successful and I could have led that classroom for myself in a healthier way and then been able to, because you think about it, like you're like, okay, I'm in this capacity to serve. I love, you know, teaching. I'm working with all these people. But then when you don't really have that mindset of putting yourself first, then it's like, how much of me are they really experiencing if I'm not putting myself first? Do you see what I'm saying?
So you're saying if you're not putting yourself first, they don't
experience? Yeah, like I feel like I would be in a better position to take better care of myself.
Okay.
And then in better turn, and then in return, then I'd be better at my job.
Absolutely.
Like being able to balance, maybe being able to say, apply these boundaries. Oh, I need to take a day off because I'm feeling this way, or, yeah, you know, or even be able to say, you know what, this job isn't for me and that's okay.
Exactly. And so what's so interesting about that is that it's 180 degrees from where you were, because before you weren't taking your vacation days because you thought that you were abandoning them and that they were going to get less of you. But in that, what happened was you gave them,
and the school was going to burn down.
Right. So they got more quantity, less quality.
Right. Right.
And that's what happens. And I see this like, even like with perfectionists, right? It's all about like, you know, with them, it's the opposite. They're focusing more on the quality and then they're not getting as much done. And then they've got all the stuff that piles up and then they get like really stressed out and burned out. So it's interesting how sometimes we choose one over the other, right? We're choosing like, it's either going to be quantity or it's going to be quality. And like, that's it. And you've got to be really, strategic about what you're doing, why you're doing it, how you're doing it, all those things, because that's going to make a massive difference. And to your point, you know, you probably could have been in that position in a much better way and still decided that it's not for you.
Right.
And I hear, exactly. And I hear, which is totally fine, but at least I think you have a better chance of surviving wherever you are when you're implementing this stuff. And then you can make a more sound decision as opposed to just feeling like you need an out and there's no other way for you to do it, which I find is often not true, you know, with maybe the exception of people who work night shifts and, mm-hmm. you know, they sometimes find it just hard because of the circadian rhythm and
right.
having to adjust. And like some nights they're sleeping during the day and some nights they're sleeping at night. And it's just too confusing and too taxing on the body. And as you get older, it becomes harder and harder to regulate. And so from that perspective, I've seen like ER docs that are like, you know what, I can't do this anymore. But, you know, I think for most professions, you know, it's going to be, it's, you know, there are obviously challenging positions to be in. In your case, it was with the kids that, you know, they could be mm-hmm. violent and all these things. But I think when you're not taking care of yourself, it makes it that much harder. And so I want to move on to the third thing that you said, which is when I felt like it was really getting to me, that I was really burning out, I went deeper into it. And I think this is very common. This is what, when we talk about work, it's really about our relationship with our work and how we engage with it. And this is an example of being overly engaged. So right when it gets tough, you push yourself even harder. And that's one of the main ways that people burn out, because they're not taking all of the signals that they're getting. Like, oh, I'm oh, it's like, it's hard. Oh, it's this, you know, and therefore I need to do something. No, it's like, let me push even harder. Let me dive even deeper. And you know, certainly that shows like your commitment and all that, but it also shows that you, you know, you have that kind of relationship with yourself where you're not really listening to yourself. And that's,
right, right.
That's a problem.
Well, I think it was everybody else's needs. Okay, now you guys are okay. Now, okay, me? Yeah. Oh, I'm too tired. I can't yeah. do anything. But another thing just to add in there is probably a month before the crash and burn forever, I was nominated for Teacher of the Year.
Aww.
So it was like, okay, this is a great honor. This is so awesome. But then I'm falling apart at the seams. Sure. Like, keep it together. Like, what is your problem? Like, you know, so it was just a lot of inner struggle. And then I just couldn't put myself first. I just put them and all of their needs first. And I really learned the hard way because I burned hard.
Yeah. So I think back to what we were saying before, resilience, part of resilience is you got to take care of yourself so that you have the energy to do what it is that you need to do. Mm-hmm. You have the mental focus to focus on the work that you need to get done. You know, if you're not going to do that, you're just not going to have as much juice. Mm-hmm. And that's a kind of basic principle that I think everybody needs to start really reevaluating in their life if they're doing enough. The other piece, which we talked about, is the mindset piece. And like, I heard you say, you know, I'm failing, I'm a failure. What's wrong with you? Even when you got that award, right? And
right.
And I think that really speaks to, this is the underlying driver for a lot of high achievers, is we want to feel accomplished. And we set really, really high expectations of ourselves. It's like, well, you know, I expect that I should have really amazing performance even when I don't take care of myself. I don't have to sleep. I don't need to eat. Right. I don't need to take vacations, but I should be number one in terms of productivity and I should get like the most things done. And, you know, and it's just like completely unrealistic. And so when we think about it from like the perspective of burnout prevention and in terms of resilience, it's really about how can I take care of myself to make sure that I have the energy and the stamina and the wherewithal to be able to, you know, get all the things done, have the energy that I need. In addition to that, what we were saying earlier, which I haven't really talked about, is really managing your thinking.
Right.
Because so much of what goes through your mind is what creates the stress in the first place, what creates the overwhelm, creates the frustration, and creates the guilt or whatever the negative emotion is. And so much of the work is to identify the thoughts that are leading you to feeling negatively. And often what we find is that there are certain thought patterns, if you will, thinking traps, where it's like an example of that is shoulds, you know, a lot of should statements. And mm-hmm. I always tell my clients, if you want to feel frustrated, tell yourself all the things that should be different, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to feel guilty or disappointed, tell yourself all the things that you should have done different. Right?
It's like, yeah, like sometimes the way that we talk to ourselves or even the limiting beliefs that we have or we've been telling ourselves for so long really have dictated a lot of the things or choices in our lives.
Exactly. And so much of this is an autopilot that we don't even realize, like when we're judging ourselves, when we are comparing ourselves to other people, when we're telling ourselves all the things that should be different. These are all examples of thinking traps. And so this is happening all the time. And that's why all of this negativity is accumulating within us. It's because of our thinking. And so a huge part of what I teach is how to monitor your thoughts, how to be a lot more self-aware, and how to intervene with more challenging questions, powerful questions mm-hmm. that help to create the kind of emotions that you want to feel, as opposed to feeling like you're a victim to your circumstances, which is never really the case. So, you know, that's another kind of thing that I really delve into with people is overcoming that myth that I am stressed, I'm burned out, I'm overwhelmed because of my job. And it's like, no, it's because of your thinking about your job. And let's talk about how to intervene so that your job doesn't create that in you because you're now changing the thoughts. You know, so, you know, resilience is kind of like an umbrella term for a lot of this stuff. But, you know, in a nutshell, I would say a lot of it is mindset shifts. Mm-hmm. It's about shifting from a mindset of everybody else is more important than I am to I recognize the importance of taking care of myself so that I can continue to give long-term to the people that I care about or the cause that I care about. It's about not beating yourself up when you've run out of steam, right? And saying, oh, I'm a failure and what's wrong with me, but actually saying like, oh, there's something wrong. Like, I'm tired. Maybe I should go take a nap.
You know, and you sleep for like 12 hours straight.
Right.
You're like, oh, I needed to rest.
Yeah. And it's about really managing your thoughts so that you are, how should I say this? You are navigating your own ship, right?
Right.
You're driving the bus, if you will. It's so easy for us to fall into the trap of letting our subconscious mind make all the decisions for us and create all of the emotions within us, which then lead to certain behaviors and then the results that we don't want. And so if you want to change your outcome, you have to change your behaviors, but your behaviors stem from your emotions, which come from your thoughts. And so you really need to start at the top. And too often people are working on changing their behaviors without ever changing their emotional state, without ever changing their thinking patterns. And it's just hard to sustain. It takes too much effort. They're not able to get the kinds of results that they want. And so it's really important to do this work properly in the right order.
Yeah. It's been, how long ago did that happen? Like 2 years ago, I'd want to say. So it was a lot of work, a lot of personal work, lots of reading books and watching like TED Talks and reading articles and lots of therapy and lots of, you know, learning how to put myself first and feeling okay with that, looking into limiting beliefs, all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, what's happened from all this stuff is positive, really positive reinforcement against that, like, awareness of myself, like, oh, now I know when I start to feel this way, it's because of this, or this happened. Like, I'm able to look at situations now and be like, oh, I see what the trigger was, or I see what happened, where before I was so maxed and so overloaded that my brain wasn't functioning right. And I just couldn't see it. So through this whole journey, and that's why I like talking about this stuff so much, is to be able to help other people. So that if they are in that situation too, then they could be like, oh, you know, I could look into this or look for other resources. And if therapy isn't something that maybe they didn't have a good experience with, or, you know, there's not enough services or professionals right now too, with everything that's going on with the pandemic, but to look into coaching for some certain teachings of skill, and to keep you held accountable too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So where can we get a hold of you?
Yeah. The best place to go is my website. It's drsharongrossman.com. So DR and then my name, sharongrossman.com. And I want to just invite people who are listening to this, who want to dive a little bit deeper into the kind of mindsets that maybe they have right now that are contributing to their burnout. I offer on my website a free webinar. So you can go on there, and that webinar is on 3 mindset hacks that you need to avoid in order not to get, you need to learn in order to avoid burnout. And so, right. I encourage people to check that out if they want to learn more. There's also a link there to take the quiz. I've got a burnout meter if you want to know how you're doing, and then we can jump on a call and give you some feedback. So that's also available on my website. I've also got a link to my book, The 70 Solution to Burnout, which also, you know, when you purchase it, comes with a workbook that you can kind of coach yourself. So that's an option.
Mm-hmm.
And then if people want to get in touch with me, there's also a link for that on my website. So lots of options, all from the same place, drsharongrossman.com.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so excited. I mean, I love talking about this kind of stuff, really, obviously, as I was saying that I thought I was the Terminator. But thank you so much for coming on the show today. And we will check out your website.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Okay. Goodbye.